You're listening to the Fix My Feet podcast. Solutions for every step in your journey with the nation's leading foot and ankle specialists.
Hey everybody, Dr. David Waters, Dr. Evan Leonard's foot and ankle surgeons here in Nebraska, and we are the Foot Fixers, and this is the Fix My Feet podcast. How you doing, Evan?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah. So we're here today. We're going to talk about something that's been very hot in the patient world, and that is 3D bunion correction. There's been a couple companies in the industry, Treace Medical, which came up with some fancy verbiage about a procedure called the Lapiplasty that's been quite popularized in the literature, as well as minimally invasive bunion correction, which has started to delve into this 3D bunion correction. And people have gone direct to the patients with some of this marketing. So there's lots of questions that revolve around it. And so hopefully we can step back, the two of us, and give you some real evidence-based answers and pearls that you can have and talk with your surgeons about when you talk about bunion correction. But maybe start off, not everybody even knows, you know, when they come in, what a bunion is. I get people that say they're coming in to see me for a bunion and they've got something going on in the back of their foot or, you know, something else. So I think there's somewhat of a misconception of what even a bunion is. In your best common language, Dr. Leonard, what's a bunion? What should patients be looking for to think whether they have a bunion or not?
We'll start with that. A lot of people have the idea that the bunion is just some extra bone growth on the inside of the foot, right at that kind of big toe joint. And while that does happen over time with these deformities, that's not the pathology that's going on. And that's not exactly what we're trying to treat when we're looking at these. And when you get a bunion, you can get it from several different causes, but the gist of it is that the metatarsal bone behind your big toe ends up starting to drift. And then as the alignment of everything gets off axis, all of the tendons and everything, when they're pulling, are starting to pull in the incorrect direction. And so that kind of exacerbates the deformity. So then the toe starts to swing over the other way. You've probably seen a relative or a friend who's got a wicked bunion and the toe's pushing over into the second toe. And at that point, the second toe has to move out of the way. And so it's kind of a progressive thing. I mean, it's generally some instability in that inside of the arch and the foot, or related to a flat foot deformity or a variety of other reasons. There's a genetic component as well. And as that progresses, then you start to get friction and rubbing on that prominence that you're getting, that protrusion on your shoes and in sandals and things. And so your body starts developing more tissue there to try and cushion that area. And so you start to get extra pressure there. You start to get increased bone growth. You can get bursas there that can be inflamed, like similar to bursitis of your hip. And then the various other things that come with that big toe not bearing its share of the weight when you're walking. And so there's a lot more to it than just a buildup of bone on the inside of the foot. And that's why we have a lot of different procedures that help correct these. I think that's why some of these companies have come out with this 3D bunion correction type stuff. And I'll kind of start there, I think, with when they're talking about, like Dr. Waters mentioned, a Lapiplasty procedure. What they're talking about is a Lapidus. And we've been doing a Lapidus procedure for bunion corrections for decades. It's not new. And it's an excellent procedure in the right patient, but it's not for everyone. And there's some certain criteria that you need to meet before that's going to be the procedure that's right for you. A lot of the 3D bunion correction is centered around the rotation of the metatarsal and not just that shift that's happening that you can kind of see, and that makes your feet not fit in your shoes very well. But there's some rotational component to it that we're also trying to fix. And the Lapidus is a great procedure for that. And some companies have jumped on that and tried to simplify that for the surgeons and put a lot of money in marketing that for the patients so that everybody feels like that's right for them. And that's just not the case. And it hasn't been the case. There's a lot of other procedures that are great for specific types of bunions and whether or not you have arthritis and whether or not you have instability. So that's kind of what we wanted to touch on today and see when it's right for you.
Yeah, I think you hit on this, but when we talk about 3D bunion correction, which is kind of what's been popularized, what they're trying to market or what they're trying to communicate to patients is that these are complex deformities. When they're saying 3D, they're talking about the three planes of the foot that we deal with, which is, you know, in medical ease, the transverse, frontal, and sagittal planes of deformity. And in that sense, what they're saying is true, that these are usually three plane deformities. So they're complex, like Dr. Leonard said, the joint's not lined up anymore, or partial dislocation we start to see of the joint, and they're progressive over time, meaning they do gradually get large. Now, I don't want to put the fear in, and I think sometimes people get the fear put in them that their bunion, tomorrow they're going to wake up and have this huge bunion. That's not the case. These are very slowly progressive deformities that progress over years, you know, as far as the progression goes. But in a sense that, you know, are these three plane deformities? Yes, they are. And I think that that's one thing that the marketing is trying to convey to patients. I don't think patients should get too caught up in that. The other thing that the marketing is trying to convey is that there's only one fix for these complex three plane deformities. And that simply is not the truth. And that's not always, just like Dr. Leonard said, the right thing for you is not going to be a Lapidus procedure. So I think let's jump off the conversation there and talk about what exactly a Lapidus is and why it's a bigger procedure than a lot of more common bunion procedures. And there can be some increased complications with that procedure. Your thoughts about that?
Yeah, well, the Lapidus procedure specifically is it's a fusion or a joining together of your tarsometatarsal joint, your first tarsometatarsal joint. And so if you kind of trace your big toe back, you've got that first joint that bends a lot. And if you keep following it back, there's a joint kind of in the middle of your foot that is termed a non-essential joint. And that just means that there's not enough motion there to really affect what you do on a day-to-day basis if this is to go away. And when we fuse this joint, we're able to position the metatarsal in a better position and also do some rotational correction as well. And some people's bunions, if they get to a point where the deformity is large enough, they need correction further up in the foot, because you can do some things down by the toes, but as the progression continues and the deformity worsens, you're not going to get adequate correction, and it's not going to be long-term stable for you. And a lot of times those are the ones that reoccur because they're not treated with the appropriate procedure. So by fusing, you're providing something that's solid, and you're also holding that in a good position, ideally for the rest of the patient's life. And a lot of times with the Lapidus procedure, you're wanting to do these on patients that have some instability along that column, or that they're having a large deformity that wouldn't really be correctable with another procedure. But for smaller bunions and things that people come in, there's a variety of other things we can do and that have a faster recovery time. Because when you're talking about fusing a joint, you're talking about waiting for that bone to heal across and that joint to go away. And that can take 6, 8, 10 weeks, depending on the patient and their health status and how fast they heal.
While walking, you exert about 3 to 6 times your body weight onto your feet. By the end of the day, that can be a few hundred tons, which is equal to 24 semi-trucks. Your feet support your entire body, but what supports your feet? Custom-fitted orthotics can last about 10 years and are doctor-approved to help your feet take the pressure of your everyday life. To book your fitting, go to www.prfootandankle.com now and click the Request Appointment button. We look forward to seeing you soon.
Which is a far longer recovery than a simple osteotomy and shifting of the bone. And so that's why we, you know, have to individualize these procedures for every patient, and not one thing is right for everyone.
Yeah, and I think what I want patients maybe to take away as a pearl from this is that when we talk about fusion is common in foot and ankle surgery, we fuse a lot of joints in foot and ankle surgery because we're dealing with a weight-bearing structure and we need a stable structure. And sometimes the best way to get a stable structure is to fuse joints and take motion away so that we can get a stable structure. But fusions are also higher risk procedures than some of the other procedures we do. And so when we talk about bunion surgery, we talk about fusion of the first tarsal metatarsal joint, which is what a Lapidus is. When we look at the evidence, the what we call non-union, or the fusion not healing, the rate of non-union or the rate of not healing of a fusion of a tarsal metatarsal joint is a lot greater than the healing, the non-union of like an a distal osteotomy or a fusion of a metatarsal phalangeal joint or some of the other things that we commonly do to treat bunion deformity. So this is not just like, oh, some guy on the radio said Lapiplasty was the next great thing. I should run down and get a Lapiplasty or even a Lapidus for that matter. It's something that you need to go see a surgeon who knows what they're talking about and have an educated discussion with them. Some of the other risks I'm thinking about, Evan, with Lapidus that maybe patients should be aware of before they just jump into a procedure like this.
Yeah, you touched on the main ones, which is just the fusion aspect of it. It's a little bit longer recovery. And so risk factors then are going to increase that are more associated with decreased weight bearing or longer periods of non-weight bearing, like potential blood clots, more stiffness in the lower extremity, need for physical therapy, things like that, because you're immobilized for a longer period of time. And so those are definitely, you know, risk factors for other things that can crop up when you're having a procedure that's a fusion versus something else that's a kind of walk on it right after surgery type procedure.
Yeah. And I don't want to scare anybody away from bunion surgery because it has a high success rate. It's somewhat more predictable, but I do want people to be educated about what they're getting into when we start talking about bunion surgery and bunion correction.
Also, I think another point on that is a Lapidus procedure done incorrectly has a lot more detrimental outcome than another procedure done incorrectly. So it's an excellent procedure for the right patient. And when it's done appropriately, correction you get in the long-term outcome are phenomenal. But if it's not done correctly, because you're working back in the middle of the foot, the problems can be exacerbated if it's put in a poor position. So that's why you really want to, you know, discuss it with somebody who knows what they're doing.
Yeah. And so maybe so our patients can identify, I know we've talked about this isn't for everybody, but some of the things from a patient's perspective that might increase their risk factors with a Lapidus procedure, I'll list one and then we kind of bounce back and forth. But if you're a smoker, you should really think twice about having a Lapidus procedure. Any type of bone joint fusion when you smoke, it becomes a lot more risky. Smoking causes what we call vasoconstriction, or the vessels get smaller and that decreases blood flow to the area along with some other effects, which really slow bone healing down. And so there's some fusions that I absolutely will not do if patients smoke. But if you're a smoker, some real thought should go into before you have a Lapidus procedure done.
Yeah. Patients who are immunocompromised or on suppressive steroids and things like that can really affect your bone healing and your soft tissue healing and the risks of you not fusing or having some problems during the course of your post-op are much higher than in the regular patient.
Yeah. Along those same lines, if you're diabetic, uncontrolled, you should really think twice before doing any kind of elective foot and ankle surgery. And so when we say uncontrolled, I think the latest recommendations from the ADA, the American Diabetic Association, is A1Cs under 7.0 is what they like to see as far as controlled, what we would consider a somewhat controlled diabetic patient that would be safe for elective foot and ankle surgery. And so that if you're uncontrolled diabetic, your chance of postoperative infection and not healing exponentially increase when your A1C and your control of your blood sugar is higher than that. So if you're in that category, you know, elective foot surgery should certainly, in my opinion, be put on hold until you get yourself more controlled. So we talked about maybe some of the things that you may want to think twice about before you consider this 3D procedure. The other thing I think that has been popularized in the literature is that recurrence is very low with Lapidus, although there's some literature that I think is refuting that now, which I think is more accurate. I do want to say, and I've done enough Lapidus and I've done a lot in my career, that and patients should know that there is recurrence even after a Lapidus procedure of bunion deformities. Like, this is not a procedure where there's like, I can look you in the eye and say there's not a chance that this bunion can recur. And that's some of the challenges with bunion surgery, many different kinds of bunion surgery. And one of the reasons I still think we're looking for the right procedure and why it's different in each patient is that the rate of recurrence is something that we're watching, or how quickly do these bunions come back and have we made any difference, you know, with correction of these. So your thoughts on recurrence, Dr. Lennox?
Yeah, I think with any procedure, yeah, there's a risk that something could shift to a different part of the foot or a different joint and cause laxity there or some sort of a deformity elsewhere that could end up leading right back to where you were before. So yeah, nothing's 100% in the foot and ankle world. I think at least from the ones that I've seen long-term and post-operatively, it's got good outcomes in terms of delaying that a little bit longer than some of the other procedures that we used to do. So I think it's head and shoulders above some of the other stuff that had been done in the past, but by no means is it a one and done. You know, you're 35, you get a Lapidus, and then you never have to worry about a bunion for the rest of your life. So there's always a chance that these things can recur, and that's definitely something you should be aware of.
Yeah, and I think what the literature has shown more than anything, at least the consistent trend from our perspective where we read the literature, is that, and one of the things that they're trying to accomplish with 3D bunion correction, which I applaud the research, I'm a big believer in the research that's done, but the reduction of the sesamoid position, and for those who don't know what sesamoids are, they're two little bones that are underneath the big toe joint in your foot. But reducing that sesamoid position seems to be a consistent trend in the literature, that is reducing the rate of recurrence if we get those sesamoids reduced into the right position. And so that is some of the thought process behind why we've gone to a more 3D approach with derotation, or reducing the rotational part of the deformity, as well as moving the bone over in that transverse plane. So those things have helped to reduce recurrence. And I think that that's one of definitely the advantages of a Lapidus procedure, if you're the right patient for that procedure, that helps it be better.
Yeah, I'd agree with that 100%. I think as more research comes out, I think these are a lot more complex than they used to get credit for. There's a lot about the mechanical axis of the metatarsals and how, you know, the direction the tendons are pulling. And like you said, the rotational component and the sesamoid apparatus and all this jargon, but there's a lot of stuff that is probably still unknown about these that will help us improve these procedures and probably develop new procedures down the road. It's a common issue, and it's definitely worth all the research that's being put into it because it affects a lot of people.
So let me throw a couple scenarios at Dr. Leonard. It's on the fly, maybe unfair here, but patient comes in, middle-aged patient, could be male or female, though females are much more common with this deformity. They want one procedure and that's it. Like, I want to be done. I don't want this thing to ever come back. I don't want to have foot surgery again. I just want to be done with my deformity. What are your thoughts? What are some maybe procedures or the procedure we should tell our patients and our listeners to discuss with their surgeons?
I'd bring them over, shave it down, and probably do a MPJ fusion. If this was a patient who never wants to do anything again, they're healthy enough for a fusion procedure, and I think I can clinically reduce them to a point that is appropriate for the positioning that they're going to be able to walk and do all of their normal activities afterwards, then I think that's probably the procedure I'd go with. Unless there's a lot of instability along that medial column, or they're getting some arthritic change in the tarsal metatarsal joint, or there's something else going on that's going to change my direction a little bit. But if it's isolated to the first MPJ, I'd probably start there.
Yeah, I agree. I think that is a procedure you should discuss. It doesn't get talked about as much because it's not sexy in the literature or in the marketing side of things. But I think it's a procedure you should discuss with your surgeon when you're talking about bunion correction. That's first metatarsal phalangeal joint arthrodesis. The literature is very good on it. Patients do very well. Satisfaction rates are up in the 90th percentile for initial successful first metatarsal phalangeal joint arthrodesis. The downside, just to educate our listeners, is that your big toe does not move up and down anymore after first metatarsal phalangeal joint arthrodesis. But the literature also shows, as far as high-level athletes, they function just fine. Marathon runners, basketball players, they go back to their normal activities. But if you're a stiletto-wearing girl, this is not the procedure for you. I always throw that out there, like that is not, you're not getting in your stilettos after this procedure, you know. So
maybe we need to rename it 3D metatarsal phalangeal joint fusion. Maybe it might give it a little bit more appeal, a little bit more pizzazz.
Yeah. Okay, next scenario. I'm a younger female. I've got a bunion deformity. Again, MPJ, bunion metatarsal phalangeal joint pain. I'm very concerned about the cosmetic scar after the procedure. Like, I still want to get good correction. You know, I want to talk to you about 3D correction, but I want minimal scar as possible. I don't want to have scars on my feet. What are some things that they should be talking to surgeons about and seeing if their surgeons are, if they're comfortable with those kinds of procedures.
Yeah. I mean, barring any like obvious red flags in terms of the patient or some other things going on with the deformity, I'd probably talk to them about like a minimally invasive distal osteotomy, MIS bunionectomy, especially for that patient population. There's minimal scarring, minimal incision size, and you can still get very good correction out of it. But again, it would depend on some other factors, whether or not they've got those younger women tend to come in and they have a lot of first rate instability a lot of the time. And so they, a lot of those are ones that you want to look at something else. And a lot of times they are a good candidate for a Lapidus, depending on what else is going on with them. But I think an MIS bunionectomy is also a great option for that. Or if you're able to close up very well and do some running monocrural and get your incision to look good, then I think an open bunion procedure is just fine. And a lot of these patients too, that still has its place and it's not probably not going anywhere for a while.
Yeah, I think those are great options. And I think the third scenario, and we've highlighted it already, but if you have a moderate to large deformity, you have a lot of instability. I know it's hard for a patient maybe to understand, you know, what stable and unstable foot is like. So this is where you need to meet with a surgeon that really knows what they're talking about. Then I think Lapidus is the procedure in those kind of situations. It's going to stabilize the medial column of the foot, which is that inside part of the foot. It's going to give you a more functional foot to propulse off of, and it's going to be able to correct the deformity. So there's a right procedure, and every situation is a little unique. And that's one of the things I wanted to highlight in this episode and give patients some information to, like we talked about, advocate for themselves and make good informed decisions about some of these deformities and some of the things that can be done. One last thing I wanted to touch on with Dr. Leonard, so we've mentioned it a couple of times, and that is elective surgery versus cosmetic surgery. So many times I get patients come in my office, want to talk about bunions, and they're worried that it's cosmetic surgery. So just a little education, Dr. Leonard, it's elective surgery versus cosmetic surgery.
If you come in and tell me you're concerned about your bunion and I ask how much it hurts you and you say it doesn't hurt you at all, then we're not doing surgery on it. And I think that's how it should be.
Yeah.
There's risks with surgery like we talked about, and there's a chance, and I tell people that there's a chance this hurts more after surgery than it does now if you're not having any pain. And I think it's, from that standpoint, if it's not giving you any issues, there's no reason to fix it yet. But when this gets to a point where it's causing discomfort all the time, you can't fit in the right shoes, you can't do activities with your kids that you like to do, you can't stay active, so you're gaining weight, there's all sorts of problems that go along with it, it definitely shifts away from being a cosmetic surgery to a functional surgery and reconstruction of that to improve your life. And so when that point comes, it's really only you that can tell us that, because some people will come in and they've got a huge bunion and you're like, wow, this has got to be the worst. And they're like, no, it doesn't hurt me at all. And people come in and there's not much going on clinically, but we get an x-ray and there's a little bit of a bunion and they say, I can't function with this. It hurts too much. And so everybody's a little bit different in that aspect. But from the cosmetic standpoint, it's not worth the risks of surgery to correct something that's not hurting you, period.
Yeah. Well said. Yeah. There are risks with surgery. And as two people that do a lot of surgery, there are definitely risks and complications that arise. And, you know, if there's not a functional reason to do it, then it shouldn't be done for sure. Bunions, super common. Lots of stuff on Facebook, lots of stuff out in the social media verse about bunions. So hopefully we've provided some clarity about it. Both of us have done thousands of bunion procedures. So if that's something you're interested in, you're local here, or if you want to come in and get a consult with us, we'd be happy to discuss those things with you in a more formal fashion. But otherwise, hopefully we've given you some pearls in regards to bunion surgery that you can take back and speak with your own doctors and your own surgeons and come to the right conclusion for yourself in regards to bunion surgery. For all of us here, foot fixers, we want to thank you for listening today. I think it's been a really good episode. Coming up, things to look for coming up, more discussions on common deformities, bunions, hammer toes, flat feet, things like that, and continuation of our track as it revolves around total ankle replacements and some of the hot topics and questions that patients have around those we'll be discussing here. So Dr. David Waters, Dr. Evan Leonard's, This is Fix My Feet Podcast. Check us out on social media. We're at Platte River Foot and Ankle Surgeons on Instagram, or Platte River Foot and Ankle Surgeons on Facebook, TikTok, YouTube channel, or the Facebook page for the podcast itself, Fix My Feet Facebook page. Drop us, leave us comments. We'll make sure we work those into the podcast. Until next time, have a wonderful day.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Fix My Feet Podcast. To schedule an appointment with one of our providers, visit www.prfootandankle.com.